Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the media analysis with some bells and whistles and audio cruise missiles. It's the Newsbusters podcast. Yes, it's that lovely time of year where there's an anti-Trump book out. Oh, goody! This time it's another Bob Woodward book. This one's called Peril, and this time he has a co-author from the Washington Post, Robert Costa, who actually stepped down from his gig hosting Washington Week on PBS to become the new Bernstein, or to make media history, or in this case, hysteria. Oh, how CNN loved this book's debut. They are just wallowing in it like it's Christmas morning, and Woodward was Santa Claus. I guess this would make Robert Costa Buddy the Elf. La la, la la la, la 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 la. Oh, how much fun. CNN wants to spend the entire first year of Biden's presidency obsessing over Trump's alleged behavior in January. The alleged scoop this time around is that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, was chatting up a fellow general in communist China, advising him that if there was going to be some crazy nuclear attack from President Moron, he would call and give the commies a heads up. This alleged scoop did not go over well with the Republicans, who immediately seized upon it as treasonous. You don't tell our largest enemy how, you know, when we decide to attack you, when we begin bombing the Chinese in 5 minutes, we're going to call them ahead of time. None of this was likely. None of this sounds remotely plausible. I mean, look, did Donald Trump launch us into 17 wars when he was president? You know, I mean, Donald Trump didn't quite withdraw us from Afghanistan. Now he's being faulted for the way he supposedly half did it. You know, Donald Trump did have a few times where he dropped some major bombage, like in Syria, but he didn't get in any quote-unquote forever wars. He certainly didn't launch any nuclear wars. This is just the kind of story that our so-called news media just adores, this cartoon of the president as a completely unhinged, dangerous person, to the point where they think, well, I too would advise the Chinese communists, because they're our allies compared to dangerous moron Trump.
Trump rogue, the book bombshell. America's top general worried then President Trump would spark a war with China. We'll tell you the dramatic steps he took to make sure Trump wouldn't launch a nuclear weapon.
On Sean Hannity's show, Mark Levin lit into Woodward and Costa. How dare they withhold this so-called scoop for months just so for the ka-ching? Well, this is the way that Woodward operates. He always sits on whatever so-called scoop he has and waits for the book to be officially published. The media just lapped this up. They didn't find anything controversial in Woodward. As usual, it was all just enjoying the anti-Trump vibe. As Joe Wolfson, the media reporter at Fox News, tweeted, the media that was once so desperate to find Trump-Russia collusion and willing to indiscriminately accuse Trump loyalists of treasonous behavior for any ties to Russia is now actively cheering on Milley over his alleged secret calls with China. Yes, Joe, that is the ticket. That is what is going on now. Collusion with the Chinese is okay as long as we're all colluding against Trump. This is the same thing. It reminds me of the story that Paul Kengor, the author, wrote about Ted Kennedy talking to the Soviets under Reagan. You know, Ted Kennedy and the Soviets had something in common. They had a common enemy, and that was Ronald Reagan. This, to me, is the way the Democrats operate. They usually see the gravest national security threat in the world to be the Republicans. Not Al-Qaeda, not the JV team at ISIS, not China unleashing a virus. You can't call it a China virus. That's racist. So Nick Fondacaro noted what we all saw yesterday, this CNN and MSNBC cheerleading, and ABC and NBC and CBS, for what General Milley is alleged to have done and said. Now here's the interesting part. General Milley wasn't commenting. This should underline for everyone that Bob Woodward is selling a book. He doesn't care what happens to General Milley. And he is selling a book, as usual, by making gossipy revelations and recounting conversations that no one has on tape. He might have his interviews on tape, but all these conversations that he, quote-unquote, recreates, he didn't have them on tape. And as usual, he proclaims his method. It's based on more than 200 interviews with 200 people on the condition that they remain anonymous. How convenient for them. And how convenient for Bob. Because the interesting thing about using all these anonymous sources is it sexes up the book. Oh, Bob Woodward has the secret scoop. He's got the hot poop. Well, sometimes it is poop. This can be fake news. Younger people may not remember Bob Woodward's book in 1987 that was called Veil, in which he claimed that former CIA director under Reagan, Bill Casey, gave him a deathbed confession in the hospital that he had known about the diversion of Iran arms sale money to be diverted to the Nicaraguan Contra resistance, the anti-commies against the Sandinistas. That was the hot Democrat scandal against Reagan in 1987. And as usual, Bob Woodward and the Washington Post were there to stick up for the communists in Nicaragua and the Democrats. And once again, if you weren't there at the time, Jim Wright, the Speaker of the House, was going down and chatting up the Sandinistas because they had a common enemy, the Reagan administration. Anyway, so obviously it became quite controversial, this idea that somehow Woodward had snuck into the hospital to get Bill Casey's deathbed confession. There was like political cartoons that had, you know, Woodward in a nurse's outfit, you know, or whatever. You can question his methods. There was no video of him in the hospital. Casey's family, his daughter Bernadette, said didn't happen. In his defense, Woodward quoted a head of the CIA administration called William Donnelly, who said, Woodward probably found a way to sneak in. Now, how is that a defense? This was Woodward's defense. He found some guy at the CIA who was probably a major source for him on this book to come forward and say, I think Woodward probably was in there. That's not the way we construct news stories. These people suppress stories that if they're anti-Democrat stories. If you used methods like this, I have an anonymous source. I may have gotten into the hospital to get this. Maybe I didn't. How would Facebook and Twitter and Google treat a story like that? I think we know. The word is suppression. Now, on Woodward's 1987 book, Veil, the Bill Casey deathbed confession wasn't the only questionable hospital story in that book. Woodward also claimed in Veil that Ronald Reagan's recovery from his 1981 assassination attempt was poor. He claimed Reagan could concentrate only for a few minutes at a time in the hospital, and in the following days would only be able to, quote, remain attentive only an hour or so a day. Was he a nurse in that hospital, too? Because Reagan's physician at the time, Dr. Daniel Ruge, hotly disputed this Woodward portrayal. He told the Associated Press, Reagan's recovery was, quote, superb. I never saw anything like that. It's certainly news to me. And I was there all the time. So should we really believe everything Bob Woodward claims and everything that the Washington Post puts on the front page? I think we all understand where the Washington Post is coming from. But ABC and CBS and NBC jumped on this story on Tuesday night. They shared this narrative that General Milley was only trying to prevent an unhinged president from launching World War III on his way out of the White House. As usual, they didn't wait. They didn't investigate this on their own. You know, notice how these people sat around for months refusing to report on Hunter Biden's laptop, except to say, hey, we don't want to share what we're told has all the hallmarks of Russian misinformation. But when it's Woodward, they treat him as the gold standard because they all share the same political agenda. Woodward's still revered for taking down Richard Nixon, and they all shared the goal of taking down Trump. And clearly, books like these are trying to make Trump more radioactive than he already is for 2024. Now, it's kind of funny on CNN, Jamie Gangel, who used to be at the NBC Today Show and so on for many years, Jamie Gangel came running to Woodward's defense and Milley's defense. She's claimed Milley was acting as a guardrail against Trump, trying to prevent an unnecessary war. Jake Tapper had mentioned that Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, had called for Milley to resign. Gangel scoffed at this. She said,
I think there are going to be some politics involved here, and I don't think Marco Rubio has read the book yet. I would suggest people read the book and look at it in context.
Well, that's not what CNN's doing. CNN, like everybody else, is pulling out one page of snippets and hyperventilating about it. They're not reporting the book in context. You know, you could see CNN maybe saying, well, we're basically going to record the audiobook here at CNN. We're going to spend 8 hours reading each chapter. That might be in context. CNN isn't giving it to you in context. But it's so funny. You critique, Marco Rubio critiques Milley, and the CNN's like, you can't do that because you haven't read the entire book. Well, then CNN can't critique it. I guess Gangel's saying, I've read the entire book because I got an advanced copy. Well, how good for you. But it's like Gangel should be getting some sort of tip from Bob Woodward. Oh, you can't comment on this until you pay your $25.99. Now, Chris Cuomo was sort of the resistance inside CNN on this. He actually quoted Alexander Vindman, the hero of the first Trump impeachment. Vindman actually tweeted that if this Milley story were true, he felt Milley should resign for undermining the chain of command. Well, isn't that interesting? I don't think they were all running around covering Vindman last night on ABC, CBS, and NBC. Now, the other thing that doesn't really get considered here that we would always advise you to keep in mind, that Woodward has a history of going all soft when Democrats are president. There's no, we're going to do three books about what a danger Bill Clinton was. We're going to do three harsh books on Obama and Biden. You know, when Jimmy Carter was president, Woodward wrote a book about John Belushi instead of Carter. And there, too, people accused him for telling stories about Belushi that weren't true, that he didn't have it right. Dan Aykroyd, among others, said that Woodward didn't get the Belushi story right. Under Clinton, he wrote a book called Shadow, but that was about a pile of presidents and not just Clinton. You know, he writes really soft books about the Democrats. Under Obama, he wrote these two flaccid books, one called The Price of Politics that was about budget negotiations. And then he wrote a book called Obama's Wars. You could see right there in the dust cover what kind of book this is going to be, because it's described how Woodward reveals how a cerebral and engaged president tries to get out of Afghanistan. He's cerebral. He's engaged. He's not an unhinged moron like this last guy. Yes, it's a story about how Obama and Biden want to get us out of Afghanistan, but the generals like David Petraeus wouldn't let him. And here we are under President Biden, and Woodward's still writing about Trump. You know, just like the Washington Post. I mean, they are still obsessing about Trump. And Joe Biden, well, we'll get around to that. But there, you can already ask yourself this question. Who's going to write the anti-Biden tell-all? Does anyone remember the hot anti-Obama tell-all book by someone inside the administration? I mean, we have this coming now from former White House press secretary and Melania press secretary Stephanie Grisham's got a new book, and they're all really excited about that. There's no hot anti-Obama tell-all. There was no hot anti-Clinton tell-all from inside the Clinton administration. You'd actually find this interesting. The closest thing to that under Clinton was a book in which there was one chapter, I believe, or a section of a book by Andrew Cuomo, the HUD secretary. And you never heard about that because, well, who wanted to hear anything of criticism of Clinton? You know, they can do these massive book stop stories, size books about Obama that are critical of Obama. No press. I mean, this is just the way it operates. Now, we should conclude this segment by noting this is the third anti-Trump book in 2021 from Washington Post reporters. First, we had two health reporters that nobody's heard of who wrote a book called Nightmare Scenario, Inside the Trump Administration's Response to the Pandemic That Changed History. Let's guess, this was not a book critical of China. It was Trump's nightmare scenario. It was a nightmare that he was president when this happened. Then we had the two political reporters, Philip Rockler and Carol Lenig, wrote, I Alone Can Fix It, Donald J. Trump's Catastrophic Final Year. See, by comparison, just calling a book peril is kind of mealy-mouthed and mild by comparison. This is what the Washington Post does. Just like we had in 2016, the Washington Post did a book called Trump Revealed, Ripping into Trump. Did the Washington Post in 2016 do a book investigating Hillary Clinton? Of course not, because they're a Democratic rag. They are DNC property. And everybody needs to keep this in mind when they have these so-called books full of anonymously sourced hot scoops. You should feel free not to take it as, you know, the automatic truth. Because what you're going to find, first of all, you can't prove half of it because all the claims are anonymous. You certainly can't prove that these conversations happen because they're not on tape. And Bob Woodward is a liberal Democrat. Bob Woodward's a guy who actually said at one point in the Clinton presidency that Hillary Clinton had gone through the Stations of the Cross. That's all I need to know. Don't take it seriously. Take it skeptically. Joining us now in the Newsbusters podcast, Tieran Rose Mandelberg, with her new YouTube show at our MRC TV page, Censor Track with TR, and our website, censortrack.org. Check it out. So we're here to talk about the latest in big tech spiking, censoring, fact-checking, manipulating how we seek information on the internet. We'll start today with Live Action. The pro-life group has been buying pro-life ads on Google. And then suddenly, Google said, nope, we're going to ban promoting those videos. What could be their excuse? I mean, is it inaccurate medical information?
Honestly, it's kind of ridiculous. Yeah, it kind of just grinds my gears. It's like, They allow such ridiculous things to go up there, and they, you know, everybody gets to post whatever, and then one person's opinion, because it's conservative or pro-life or whatever, they're like, no, just kidding. But the thing is, they had these ads up for 4 months, you know, and then the Texas abortion law happened, and all the abortion activists were like, oh, let's shut down everything that's pro-life. And so now, you know, I think Live Action spent, what, $170,000 on these ads, and now they're just like, oh, Google's like, just kidding, you can't have those.
Yeah, I think maybe people have forgotten, maybe they haven't, that the guys who founded Google are major donors to Obama.
Yeah.
And this is just another episode to me where it seems like they're fine with stuff sort of hanging out until, yeah, somebody on the left objects.
Right.
That suddenly, and as you suggest, I mean, that's got to be what happened.
Yeah.
Texas happened, and then suddenly, oh, they got a pile of complaints. Like, how can you allow this to survive?
Right, exactly.
The other thing that was funny was that there's a song out there. John Andrasik of the group Five for Fighting has a new song called Blood on My Hands, which criticizes President Biden. and the fiasco of U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Now, he, I know, went on News Nation and said, this is not a political song, it's a moral song, it's a humanitarian crisis, but I think we all know that if your song somehow critiques President Biden, it is automatically a political song. And now Facebook's blocking ads for this.
Right, yeah, that's unsurprising. It's like, you know, you say anything that's against the left agenda and they're just like, you know, with the live action, they're like, no, we're cutting it down. The song, it's, you know, it's not, I love Biden, I love Fauci. So they take it down. It's like, what, you know, they're going to censor it. And honestly, props to John because he's got some guts to put something like that up, you know, at least for now.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of boggles my mind because, of course, protest songs when Republicans are in office and have controversial wars, they absolutely celebrate them.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone remembers the Dixie Chicks. And, you know, the Dixie Chicks, I mean, basically they started out with a fairly calm thing where they said they weren't proud of Bush. They were from Texas and they weren't proud of Bush, but they said this in London. Well, yes, fans of country music and country radio made this controversial for a while. And of course, the liberal media's reaction was to just absolutely celebrate them. Oh, they were so censored. They made them, you know, uber famous. And that's just not going to happen on something like this. I mean, they're all going to pretend this song doesn't exist.
Yep, exactly.
And I suppose when you suppress it, then that's what you get. Andrzejczyk said, he said, somebody had to hold our leadership accountable. And I'll tell you, I would have written the same song if Donald Trump was president. Well, if Donald Trump was president, we would presume that everything would be entirely different.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me, the you know, social media and the news media seem so similar now. You know, social media used to be this Wild West frontier where you could say what you want. And now it just feels just as curated as the news media. You know, it has all the same reflexes and restraints and things that you can't say and facts that are uncomfortable that we are not going to share or we're going to somehow say aren't facts. Now, there's another thing going on that I thought was interesting about Instagram. I'm an old white male. My youngest child is 23, so I'm not really into the Instagram. I've seen it in little pieces. My wife is on Instagram, or at least views a lot of Instagram, so she will show me some of the images on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, the Wall Street Journal is reporting Facebook found internally that Instagram makes body image worse for 1 in 3 teen girls and increased rates of anxiety and depression. So that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
But I mean, is it accurate, I suppose, I guess when girls post on Instagram, they put forward their best selves and then other girls feel bad because nobody posts their ugly pictures on Instagram.
Right. Yeah, it's not surprising. I mean, I have Instagram. I'm 23 and it's kind of gross what you see up there and what they allow. And I'm a pretty conservative person, obviously. I'm working at the MRC, but the things like the bikini pictures and the chiseled bodies and like you can clearly tell when these photos are edited and they're not even edited by the users. They're like professionally edited sometimes. I mean, that's, you know, a case by case basis. But, you know, you look at these, they're like perfectly tanned and toned and you go on there and you're like, oh, I'm going to post this picture. And then you post it and you're like, oh, it only got X amount of likes. Well, this person got 6 million likes because her body looks like this. That means to me, you know, teenage girls, you're going to be like, oh, to me, that means I'm ugly. I'm overweight. I'm not chiseled, whatever. You know, you're going to think that way. So it's going to happen and it sucks, but I mean,
well, my concern coming from somebody my age is that whole idea of, you know, my daughter's not a conservative, but she is very modest. And I think that the whole idea of just the image of the idea that some guy who's 50 or 60 is popping around on Instagram looking at 16-year-old hotties. I mean, that's I sometimes think the girls on Instagram don't seem to think that through?
Right.
Or do you think maybe they do because it's part of the click-click?
I don't know about that. That's an interesting point. They definitely, am I allowed to say sugar daddies? The sugar daddies reach out and it's gross. And I don't know who feeds into it. And if somebody were to reach out to me in that way, if I posted a bathing suit picture or a picture at the beach or whatever the case, I would be like, I did something wrong. I need to take that picture down. Something like that. I don't want attention from old men like that. I don't know if that's what they want, but either way, I mean, it's going to happen, I guess, but it's gross.
I mean, I think anybody who has, I would say, any parent of daughters would try to say, you know, yeah, don't let social media influence your opinion of yourself. And obviously, yeah, this is where I guess we wonder as older people. We didn't have social media when we were kids. We didn't have an internet when we were kids. and there's just, so there on some level was so much less room for the bullying, for the one-upsmanship in mm-hmm. image making, for taking the clicks home and putting them on clicks with a QUE. Taking the clicks home and putting them on the internet. It's you know, we certainly had all the peer pressure and all the clicks and all of that stuff. But I mean, it's positively primitive compared to now. So it feels to me sometimes like kids take that home and experience it at home. It used to be you'd go home and the day was over and you mm-hmm. could be at home. And now they're sitting there on their phones obsessing over all that stuff continues all day long.
Yeah, absolutely. I looked at my screen time and it's gotten down. It's gone down recently. But, you know, kids go home from school after they're being, you know, at school all day with all that peer pressure. And they go home and they just look at even more online, like you said. So it's like it's a constant battle.
Yeah. And this is where we can say, I'm sure that most parents don't spend a lot of time monitoring not only their teenagers' use of social media, but, you know, do they have any idea what their teenagers are posting on social media?
Right, right. Because they don't have, like my mom and dad, they don't have Instagram. So I could just run free on there if I wanted, you know? And so I see some accounts now and it's like monitored by mom. But then the kids are 13 and still posting things that I wouldn't want my granddad to see.
So. Yeah, I mean that's the other thing, and that is the whole idea of when the kids get on, mm-hmm. where you're just like, you know, let's hope the parents say, you know, why don't you wait till you're 13, or something. But yeah, so I mean there's obviously a lot of things about big tech or social media where there is real societal concerns about all this. But it's interesting to me that the Today Show jumped on this story today. Because this is the kind of place where they feel like, yeah, let's put Facebook, you know, on the stand. Mm. But for all the other stuff that they do that we've been objecting to, all of the censorship, you know, nobody can talk about Hunter Biden or whatever it may be. You know, the networks are perfectly happy with them censoring Joe Biden or Hunter Biden, any negative information on Hunter Biden.
Well, because it fits their agenda.
Yeah, I mean, and so this takes us back to one of the things you get when you come to censortrack.org is a focus on the fact checkers, because these so-called independent fact checkers really do influence what you can see on social media or what seems to be getting disciplined on social media. You know, when you're on Facebook and the meme or the story gets a gray screen and it says, this has been you know, fact-checked or watchdogged or don't trust this meme. This gives the fact checkers just a lot of power to suppress things. And one of the things that I had noticed recently was USA Today jumped on this whole, and Snopes jumped on this whole idea that Joe Biden didn't look at his watch when bodies were loaded at Dover Air Force Base. And then they had to retract it, like, oops. You know, they didn't wait. Their whole argument was, well, you have no proof that that he did look at his watch. You know, the C-SPAN video doesn't show that. I mean, they really get out ahead of themselves. And then we had this whole experience with the so-called ivermectin or horse dewormer overdoses in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You've been working that story.
Yeah. Rolling Stone put out an article and it was like, all of the ivermectin overdose cases are taking all of the hospital beds. So now in Oklahoma, people who have been shot don't have a place to go. And then I think it was like 2 days later, they were like, oh, just kidding. This picture was from months ago. These stats are not real. Like, all of it was a lie. And people picked it up. Like, I forget who, but they picked it up and they were like, look at this story. I can't believe these right-wing psychos are, you know, sharing about ivermectin. And now gunshot patients can't have beds, but it was a lie. Like, it was a total lie, and they still ran with it.
Yeah, there was no gunshot patients, and there was no pile of ivermectin overdoses.
Yeah.
And the sad thing there was that they were all going to take Rolling Stone seriously, when we know that Rolling Stone had a campus rape hoax a few years ago at the University of Virginia. It really should not have been seen as a credible news source. If there was anybody the fact checkers should have been really nervous about, it would be Rolling Stone. But yeah, the most famous spreader of this was Rachel Maddow, and she didn't take her tweet down. You know, other people were taking the tweet down after that was exposed as a lie. For some reason, Rachel Maddow did not. A final thought, you know, I guess the question I would ask of you is, and we've sort of been on this theme anyway, and that is that, you know, you come in, and Tieran Rose is another one of these people that came in as an intern at the MRC, and we often promote our interns into full-time jobs. And I guess the question is, do you think today that the best checkers of social media are the young generation, who are on it much more than some of us older people might be? I mean, I live on Twitter, but I'm just saying, you see social media the way that other young Americans see social media. Is that a plus? Is that something that you think about when you make your show?
Yeah, I definitely think we have the potential to be. I think that as young people, though, like we've talked about with this Instagram thing, we worry about what other people are going to say. And so we get nervous to call people out. And I think that, like, with, you know, there's so many outlets and we have such a good opportunity with social media, and we just have to have the guts to be able to say the truth and defend it and not back down to, you know, whatever wokeness is out there, and just be serious. And, you know, I see all my friends posting stuff about, you know, the black screen on Instagram and how I was like wrong for not doing such. But I never, you know, just don't back down, just, you know, continue to fight. And I think the young people are what's going to help that, because I know my mom, she'll say stuff on Facebook and she's like, whatever, I'm going to die in a couple years anyway. But I'm
hopefully
like,
not.
No, I hope not. She's like, I don't know. She told me she's 29, but I'm 23. So I don't know how that worked out. But so like kids, you know, I'm still a kid. I've got a long time to go. And so I have this reputation to uphold. But, you know, you don't want to defend a reputation that's false and that's not really you. So I think that we just need to get some guts and say what we need to say.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess if you're 23, do you feel like you're in a minority, or, you know, that in your, maybe your friends, you can persuade your friends, but, you know, do you have hope that your age cohort is going to be persuadable on, you know, especially on these issues about, you know, that whether they can trust sort of the big tech moderators?
I certainly hope that my generation will be persuadable, or is persuadable. I don't know for sure, but I know, like, friends that I grew up with that are not conservative, I will pose an issue and I am wrong. I am 100% wrong. I'm like the devil, the Antichrist, whatever you want to call me. Nothing that comes out of my mouth is right. So it's like people like that, you're like, what? But I have noticed, and maybe I'm just more aware of it now, there are some people that are, you know, willing to take that risk. And, you know, people like Will Witt and Charlie Kirk with TPUSA, like, you know, they're people that are appealing to younger audiences. And it's things like that that hopefully will, you know, make young people realize what's actually going on and not just listen to what Instagram says, because that's all crap.
Well, and I think so. I think that I would try to always say to conservatives, you know, if you're going to try to understand the way the liberals are arguing about something, yes, starting with the position that you are the devil and the Antichrist, it's probably a bad place to start. So you want to say, look, we watch liberal media all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to say, okay, here's what was said. Let's engage with it. Let's try to figure out what's wrong with it or what's right with it. But try not to start with the knee-jerk dismissal that you can't trust anything.
Right.
Even though yes, we know that the networks or the people that run Twitter have a record. But you want to put it, you want to take each individual claim in context. That's where we would tell you to come around to Newsbusters, to come around to Censor Trek. Check us out once, twice, 24 times a day, and thanks for listening.